Okay, hello everybody. Welcome. Welcome to Beyond Awakening, the Future of Spiritual Practice. I'm Terry Patton, the creator and host of this series, and I'm also the author of Integral Life Practice with Ken Wilber and the founder and teacher of Integral Spiritual Practice. Today we'll be continuing this deep exploration of how our spirituality can, in many ways, make good on its promise and actually help human beings meet the challenges of a world in crisis with a special guest, Candace O'Denver. As you may well already know, I convened this series to serve the evolution of consciousness and culture by creating a deep public dialogue about how spirituality can play a deep role in helping human beings find the inner resources that can enable us to rise to the challenges of our turbulent times and transition to a sustainable human presence on our planet. We've already had a whole series of deep, edgy, enlivening conversations in which we've explored many specific aspects of this question. And on this morning, I'm really delighted to be joined in conversation by Candace O'Denver in a dialogue entitled The Era of Inexhaustible Benefit. Candace O'Denver, in my opinion, is a really rare being. She's a brilliant, extremely well-educated, articulate, eloquent mother and grandmother, a true Renaissance woman whose teachings are already serving people all over the world. And I would describe her work as one of the most innovative spiritual teachings in the world today, although Candace herself rarely uses that word, the word spiritual, at all. Her original, really unique approach really goes right to the root, using fresh, original, intuitive, and universal language. She uses words like clarity, open intelligence, innate joy, and being of benefit. It draws on her lifelong familiarity with computers, the internet, information theory. She's spent over 40 years in really deep study of the implications of critical theory and art and literature, and also her deep engagement with some of the highest spiritual teachings in the world, including, I don't know if I pronounce this exactly right, Mengate, one of the highest expressions of Dzogchen, which originally came from China. She studied critical theory, critical theory, while in a collaborative graduate school program with coursework at the University of California, Berkeley, Stanford, and the California College of the Arts. And her thesis was titled Meta Space, the Basic Space of Phenomena. Her work expresses, in my opinion, the highest non-dual spiritual teachings, but she expresses it in entirely universal terms without the usual associations and baggage. And she's gathered a whole team that invented a computationally intense comparative analysis that she calls an algorithm for open intelligence and spontaneous altruism. In related research, the system of instruction she originated is producing amazingly high levels of life satisfaction and flourishing, as well as a lifestyle of benefit. And the system she teaches is called Balanced View, and it's also the name of a worldwide organization that's operating now in 180 countries. Candace coined this phrase, era of great benefit, to describe this current new era of a more universal civilization. Balanced View's research is in the submission process for an article in one of the two primary scientific magazines in the world, the primary one in Europe, Nature magazine from Britain. She lives in Northern California, not far from me, and teaches internationally, sometimes from the Balanced View centers in Sweden, England, and India. I am so happy to welcome you, Candace, to join me this morning on Beyond Awakening. Welcome.
Thank you, Terry. It's good to be here with you. And thank you for your kind introduction.
Well, great. Thank you. We met, I think, for the first time, maybe, I don't know, 5 or so years ago. And then I spent some time really studying your teachings. And at their core, Your suggestion to people is remarkable for its elegant simplicity. It's really crystalline. Would you be willing to offer us a brief summary and perhaps guide us through the process of experiencing what you're recommending?
Yes, certainly I would. There's a catchphrase, and it is short moments, many times, open intelligence becomes obvious. And so what is open intelligence? That's what the question usually is. And open intelligence is our own intelligence, but it is also nature's intelligence, the intelligence of all data, all phenomena whatsoever. And so in order to connect with that, all we need to do is stop thinking. Boom. And we stop thinking. Then we describe what's there. What's there when we're not thinking? When we're not thinking, alertness is present. Vivid clarity is present. And that's what open intelligence is. And so in every thought we think, every emotion we have, every sensation, every experience, open intelligence. The same open intelligence identified in not thinking is also present in all thinking, in all phenomena whatsoever. Wherever phenomena are, you know, open intelligence is. So essentially you could say that a phenomenon sees itself.
Now, I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of a listener who's hearing this for the first time, and they might say, so I'm already always doing this, I guess, from what you're saying, but I'm not sure I've had much of a feeling for it. How do I connect with this, or how does this that's already there happen to show up in a way that I can notice and appreciate? In some way new.
Excellent question, Terry. That's where short moments come in. Short moments of open intelligence, uncontrived open intelligence, repeated many times, become obvious at all times. So open intelligence is always already present. It's just that we haven't trained ourselves to acknowledge it. When we train in acknowledging it, it becomes obvious to us. And it is very, very powerful. It is not only the basis of our own intelligence, but the intelligence of all that is as well. By our nature, we are entirely beneficial. Open intelligence is entirely beneficial. And so you could say that it aligns us with reality. As it is the essence of reality, these short moments align us with reality, and we're able to see everything much more clearly, to have both a comprehensive overview and profound insight into each situation we encounter.
So the benefits that flow are partly from having a less constricted perspective because it's informed by this spacious ground in a different way, but maybe more than that.
Well, definitely informed by the spacious openness of open intelligence and its spontaneous presence. Informed by that, but also it alters the way that we have seen reality and seen ourselves, because we come to see ourselves very clearly rather than through lots of conceptual frameworks or points of view. We come to identify with open intelligence as our primary identity, rather than many different conceptual frameworks about our identity. You could say that we as humans have a choice for open intelligence, but also it's already present. We, as an evolutionary imperative, will move in this direction.
Mm.
And so this is why the phrase, the era of great benefit, was coined to give a name to give words to what is actually occurring right now. Humanity is undergoing a profound shift in the way it sees itself, and a dephysicalization, it could be called, where our emphasis isn't so much on the fight and bite of survival that has driven the way we form conceptual frameworks for such a long time, and instead we want to comprehend our role in the universe even more, to comprehend the universe itself, and to use the intelligence of the universe that actually exists within us, to use it in a usable way.
And when you speak, there are a number of words that I know you use in quite expanded respects, like, for instance, points of view. As I understand it, by points of view, you're really referring to all perceptions, experiences, thoughts, feelings, sensations, more or less everything that I experience from any point of view, from any perspective, what might in other contexts be called anything the ego experiences is a point of view. Is that an accurate summary of what you mean to refer to there?
Yes, that's an accurate summary. And to that, I would add that ego is a point of view.
Or even the idea of it.
Yeah, the idea of an ego is a point of view.
Right.
It's a conceptual framework, a box to a tunnel, a point of view tunnel to tunnel into, and it's a tunnel or room of discovery. Whereas open intelligence is always open within all points of view, whatever they are. So, from open intelligence, what occurs with for us on a moment-to-moment basis, from the way we've been trained, is that we automatically divide points of view. In other words, all those things you just mentioned, any type of experience, we automatically divide them into positive, negative, or neutral categories. And the positive points of view are points of view we want to have more of. Like a healthy ego, for example, would be a positive point of view. And the neutral would be those that we are indifferent to. And the negative are the afflictive points of view, the ones we want to get away from. And with these points of view, then we either indulge them, avoid them, or replace them, all with the aim of having more positive points of view. And by relying on open intelligence, we add a fourth choice, and that is the clarification of points of view. We clarify all points of view within open intelligence. That means we have a comprehensive overview. For example, you mentioned ego as a point of view. We have a comprehensive overview of what ego means as a conceptual framework we may or may not want to be involved in. And we also have, if ego is something that is of interest to us, we can also then have deep and profound insight into what an ego is and what an ego does.
Now, this is very rich. There are a number of different directions that I'm kind of impelled to go in, kind of moving forward, but I'm noticing some questions that have come in, and I realize I don't want to leave anybody behind. One of our listeners says, well, how do we stop thinking? We all have thoughts running through us all the time. I'm curious about that. And another one from Arizona says that to tell someone to stop thinking, there'll be a struggle to not think, but awareness is also thought, and space is there all the time. So they're kind of arguing with that idea of stopping thinking a little bit, I guess. So maybe there's something to speak to there.
Oh, yes. Well, I just suggest complete relaxation. Just to rest naturally. If you can't stop thinking, and to really get in touch with what it is that is knowing any kind of conceptual framework called stopping thinking, any kind of point of view, the basic alertness, clarity, cognition that is required for any experience.
Mm-hmm. Now, to me, when I first encountered your expression, the thing that I felt was just liberating and fresh and brilliant was that you cleaved with such, clarity and consistency to simply recognizing whatever arises as the basic space of awareness rather than trying to change it in any way, trying to, you know, make it good, make it go away, whatever. You were really cutting through all the strategies and efforts that are normally tensing us in relation to the flow of experience into a mode of simple recognition. And that seems to me at the essence of the highest non-dual teachings that I've ever encountered, as really a very high and secret teaching very often in the context where I've encountered it in spiritual literature. But you make it just so fresh and original, and you know, it's the kind of thing you could legitimately say to a hard-headed agnostic scientist or discuss in the public conversation of the media of anywhere in the world. And the fact that you were doing that at the same time just struck me as being amazingly original and potentially important. I'd like to give you a chance to elaborate on that.
Oh, sure. The all of our experience, whatever it is the dynamic energy of open intelligence. And by gaining familiarity with open intelligence, we come to a point where we have always on open intelligence at all time. And this comes about by just allowing all points of view, all mind content data or whatever you want to call it, by allowing it to flow on by. For example, you had used the word ego or the conceptual framework ego earlier on. If you have had an idea about trying to get a healthy ego, any thoughts about that would be just allowed to flow on by. So the recognition would stay with open intelligence rather than going into ideas about the ego. And all of this to really find out about you, who you are, who am I? Who am I really? What is my intelligence? Where do I want my intelligence to go? What do I want my life to be like? What are my strengths, gifts, and talents? And so the clearer we are, with whatever we want to call it, awareness, clarity, open intelligence, the clearer we are, the more beneficial we can be in the world. When we aren't using all of our energy to try to gain positive points of view, then we can use that energy to be of benefit. We are spontaneously altruistic by nature. When we use all of our energy to work on the word game and all the labels, then we disidentify, you could say, with the open intelligence that is the basis of who and what we are. Now, many times when open intelligence is first recognized, it's fairly subtle, or it can come as a big blast. But what's most important is to not try to keep it in place, but just again and again revisit for short moments whenever there is a natural impulse to do so. And by these short moments, open intelligence becomes obvious at all times. Clarity becomes obvious at all times. And like you said, this has been a very secret teaching that's been around for thousands of years. And it definitely has key points and instructions that go along with it that are very important. And so just like you said, to allow all points of view to flow on by, to really open up to the basic nature of who and what we are, to enter into a complete refinement of all definitions of what a human being is. This is really critical, urgent, and important, especially at this time in human history. We really need a high nutrition diet of open intelligence to open up to some of the problems we face that we cannot solve. We have the power within open intelligence to solve all problems we face. In fact, just the recognition of open intelligence by human beings guarantees an unending era of great benefit. Everyone on this call is at least interested to, if not 100% committed to what I'm talking about here. And so there are many ways in which open intelligence can become instantiated as the primary way of seeing life. It isn't only through practice and training, but we will come upon many other modes as well of instantiating open intelligence. As I said earlier, as an evolutionary imperative, we are at a place in our evolution now where we have achieved a great understanding about who we are and what the cosmos is. And now it's time to turn around and take a look at ourselves and really take a look at ourselves in the same way that a physicist would look at a subatomic particle and say, what am I really? Many of the things we believe about ourselves, you could say, are a form of internalized oppression. They oppress us rather than exalt us. And we are by nature, I feel, exalted beings in our ability to be spontaneously altruistic, in our intelligent abilities. We really are exalted creatures. We're unusual creatures. And I would like everyone to know that. So by the power of a very simple but radical training, short moments many times, anyone can become acquainted with the power of their own intelligence. Anyone can see exactly who they are and not be bound by ideas of who they are. For the first time in human history, we went out about between the time period 10 and 15 years ago asking people all over the world, who are you? You know, what do you want? What do you want out of life? What do you expect of your body and mind? What do you expect it to provide for you? What would you like it to provide? And what we heard over and over again is very simple. People want a satisfying life, and they want to flourish in their life. This is what we all want, life satisfaction and flourishing. And we then put together a system of instruction to bring that about. And like you said when you so kindly introduced me, we've been very successful with that. In the studies we've done, we found that a very high percentage of our participants achieve perfect life satisfaction or almost perfect life satisfaction.
Now, I mean, that's provocative, and I'm sure people are kind of chewing on that. I'd like to go back to something a little more basic. I want to go on to some things about this marvelous work you're doing with information theory. But before I do, I want to kind of circle back to this more basic idea of brief moments. That is another one of the brilliant design elements, it seems to me, in the particular recommendations that you make. Because what I heard you point out early on in my getting to know you was that as soon as we're trying to prolong a moment of clarity, it's gone. And that the recognition of the nature of a point of view is always fresh. Like if I recognize, oh yeah, this is projected in some sense, made of the screen. You use some wonderful metaphors, several of them being sky metaphors, blue and rainbow, that really, really open this up, I think, to the feeling being, and the fact that that recognition in that moment, that's fresh, but then trying to make it prolong, that isn't. And to simply become delighted by the fact that that recognition is available in any moment that I remember to exercise it, that seemed to be kind of one of the great gifts in the approach that you were teaching.
Well, thanks, Terry. It is a great gift that each of us can give to ourselves, and that's really important to know. It's crucial to recognize that emphasis on all our mind content is. It's just de-energizing and tiring. It leads to tension and confusion, whereas clarity or open intelligence open all of that up. And all the while, the intelligence is inseparable from whatever is appearing, just like the color blue is inseparable from the sky. It isn't like a cat and a mouse, open intelligence, watching the mind content. It's the inseparability of open intelligence from the mind content. And so that's what is really pointed out and introduced and completely confirmed. If you stop thinking, there is a basic cognition present, a basic clarity, and that clarity is completely inseparable from whatever is appearing, say the thought of anger or the thought of what am I going to do next, completely inseparable, like a rainbow is inseparable from the vast space of the sky. And the instinctive recognition of that requires no thought to keep it in place. It's instinctive, been with us always as the very basis of who we are, the basis of our entire lifespan is an utterance of this cognition, this very special instinctive recognition. There isn't a need to try to get it or keep it, try to prolong it or make it shorter. It's absolutely present. And by simply acknowledging it, it becomes obvious very quickly. There aren't any prolonged periods that can be gotten into because it's only here right now. And so to face a prolonged period of trying to recognize something would really be no different than walking through the life of this day, regardless of where we are or who we are. It's always present. Now, to go from cat watching a mouse type clarity to always on clarity is simply a matter of recognizing it. And don't stop at the point of cat watching a mouse. Continue on until there's obvious recognition of complete inseparability.
And this is exactly what it is that you're talking about. People who take that on in a systematic way and really learn how to do it and get support in the questions that they have so that they can really embrace this practice. These are the simple practices, the ones you're just already describing to us, that produce this remarkable level of life satisfaction.
This remarkable level of life satisfaction, yes, it is. It really is a lifestyle, and it has a system of instruction we call the Four Mainstays, the practice of short moments, a teacher, a certified teacher, and thousands of hours of training media, all free, and a worldwide community. We offer support 24/7 around the world and for anyone who is committed to the practice of open intelligence, the practice of clarity.
Well, I think that some people are asking questions. There's one, particularly one that came in from a fellow here in Atlanta, Georgia, Paul Hinson. Normally, I don't take questions till the end, but today I kind of want to get into some really rich stuff because you've shared with me of this remarkable article. You've early draft of this article you're writing for Nature. I want to get to that, but I want to make sure we're bringing everybody along. And there are some questions here that really are a little bit more fundamental, and I do think that they deserve to be answered before we go further. Paul asks, this seems to be a very passive way of responding to one's environment and events, and I think that simple observation on a deep level is very helpful, but how does one observe on a deep level during the busyness of daily life? It really seems like you're speaking of mindfulness. How do your recommendations differ from a simple practice of mindfulness?
Well, I would rather talk about the results depths of our work than compare it to other practices that I haven't been engaged with myself. And because I have not had that experience, I can't really talk cogently about it like a practitioner of mindfulness could. But I can speak about clarity practice or the practice of open intelligence. And rather than being a passive observer, one becomes intimately involved with all of life. So you could say the focus goes from self-focus, in other words, a tight inward-looking focus on oneself and every single thought, emotion, sensation, and experience one is having, to an opening that includes all points of view. The recognition is the seeing of the cosmos by itself and everything it contains. And so it goes from the way we're trained, which is very narrow, obsessive self-focus, to a vast, open, entirely beneficial perspective, to not only being concerned about our own afflictive states, but a deep relationship with the afflictive states of all beings. It isn't a passive way of living at all, but an entirely energetic, fully enlivened way of being. When energy is no longer involved in games of figuring out what to do with different thoughts and emotions, and they're just allowed to flow on by as they are, we open up a rich perspective of those thoughts, emotions, sensations. We see that they actually are the energy, our own dynamic energy that is available to be of spontaneous benefit, that although we're trained in self-focus, we don't have to stay that way. We can draw on our intelligence and use it in any way we want. And so the seal of is broken. The seal of all our mind training is completely broken. And we open up into an intelligence that is vast like space and is inclusive of everyone and everything, inclusive of past, present, and future. At some point in our practice, we find that we're not only relating to our own emotions, but that we have a much better sense of the emotional life of all beings, that we can really connect with everyone. We know ourselves so deeply and thoroughly by allowing everything about ourselves to be as it is, that we can connect with everyone by giving ourselves this great self-benefit of open intelligence and total clarity. We see ourselves clearly, everything about ourselves, and then we can truly have compassion. Self-compassion comes from that kind of self-knowledge, and only from self-compassion can we have uncontrived compassion for all beings. Spontaneous altruism is spontaneous. It's spontaneous. It does not need to be cultivated or contrived. It's already naturally present. And so, yes, it's the most active involvement in one's life that one could ever possibly have to to be clear, to have a primary identity of open intelligence rather than a lot of different labels.
Mm.
And then, just in terms of our level of intimacy with other human beings or other beings in general, through the self-benefit of total clarity, the self-benefit of completely open intelligence, we're able to feel a real sense of intimacy and also responsibility for life and for creation, to really enter into life fully, to be of benefit in whatever way we can.
Well, this is very rich, and I think we'll probably be getting back into the practice and the principles a good deal more when I do open things up to questions. But I want to make sure that we get a little bit into this very rich dimension of this application to information theory. My understanding from some of the reading I've done and some of our discussions, Candace, is that you are more or less in recognizing that whatever arises is inseparable from the open intelligence that is its nature and that is the recognition of it. That I think you have a line here, as data appear, they appear due to open intelligence and are inseparable from it. Open intelligence is in data, and data are in open intelligence. Regardless of the significance of the data bear the purity, openness, spontaneous presence, and indivisibility of open intelligence. Thus, data have absolute truth value. Now, it's kind of a radical, that has pretty radical implications, which is more or less saying that in some approaches, at least, to information theory, there's a philosophy that says that the ultimate nature of reality is informational, where you're considering the nature of reality to be an irreducible unity. The phrase is a unitary, irreducible system assimilated at the coincidence of inseparable open intelligence and data. Now, that rocks my world. I'm really excited about this. I know it might seem a little technical and abstruse to some of our listeners, but I want to give them at least a glimpse and hopefully a way to get a little bit of a purchase on the implications of where you've taken this.
And would you like me to speak to something in particular about that? Just the implications in general, in terms of the world we live in today and the problems we're facing?
Well, I think that's a lovely place to take it, and there might be something that's a little more technical about the nature of about data and the inseparability of points of view from the basic. Like, here's how I'm understanding it, which is, in any moment, I can recognize whatever it is that's appearing to my field of vision or whatever it is that's appearing in terms of my internal experience as the aliveness and essential radiance of awareness. I might use the word awareness or as, you know, for me the word divine works too, because just the incredible, I don't know, beauty, truth, goodness, freedom, love, the nature of it all is everything that I might want it to be. So there, that sense of recognizing, oh, it is that again, this mystery of being, you know, which is endlessly rich, that's what that telephone pole is, you know, that's what that fence is, that's what this arising moment of irritability really was, you know, that's what it is. And in that recognition, I'm returned to that orientation. And the thing that I can attest to in my own experience is that this doesn't draw me to an abstracted, avoidant, ascended relationship to that phenomenon that I've just recognized. It draws me to a freedom within myself that lets me feel a kind of friendliness to myself, the flow of experience, and the telephone pole, or the moment of irritability, or whatever it was, that in a way puts me into more contact rather than less. The recognition that it's empty doesn't draw me away from it. It draws me into it. And that seems really important. And then what I feel like I'm hearing in this very challengingly interesting, you know, extension into information theory is all phenomena carry that even the bits and bytes in my computer are in some sense, not just in some sense, but are at their very deepest nature, this same open intelligence, and that all data is that and carries some of that absolute truth value in some intrinsic way. And that kind of blows my mind, and I'm wanting to ask you to take that to another place, and maybe you want to connect that back to something. I'm wide open here, Candace. I just want to give you an opportunity to help people connect to all of these implications.
Well, I'm enjoying listening to you, Terry, actually. But it was very well stated. Well, of course, open intelligence, clarity, the divine, basic goodness, all the terms you just mentioned, have always been thought of in, or almost always, in spiritual terms or religious terms. But when we categorize it and think about it in that way, then it may not seem applicable to a field like computer science. But actually, what we do is we launch the powerhouse of our brain when we engage in clarity practice, in the practice of open intelligence. We really launch its power, and that illuminates a vast treasure of benefit, not only within us, but within all of humankind and within all of life, which provides the greatest of riches. And so that entire treasure is contained in a short moment. That entire treasure is contained by the practice of short moments. That becomes alive, instinctive all the time, not something thought about in retrospect. Like, oh, yeah, that telephone pole is open intelligence, too, or that ladybug or whatever it is. Such a simple statement as short moments actually has the great power to bring about clarity, cooperation and peace within all of global human culture. So each person practicing short moments, it's like a building block of global harmony, global peace. And in that practice of clarity, basic clarity is empowered, a very basic clarity, a very basic recognition and empowerment of one's own open intelligence and innate ability. And not only one's own innate ability, but the ability of everyone to bring about total clarity, 100% clarity at all times. This is really what is important to recognize. We don't need to categorize anything as important as open intelligence and clarity in one area, like spirituality. If we need to put it in a category, we could just say, well, it belongs to the human category. It's one of the abilities, one of the capabilities of a human being. And in order to optimize, maximize that ability to bring it forth, it requires practice. Now, once in a while, for someone, it won't require practice. It'll just be on, and that's it forever. And what we've noticed in our work around the world is that it is becoming easier and easier for people to really have the obviousness of clarity at all times, all day and all night. It's easier and easier. And what we attribute that to is simply recognizing in another human being total clarity. Then it becomes possible for the one who is wanting that. If you walk into a room full of people who are all completely clear, then it seems more possible for me too. And so just that short moment of clarity, like I described before, to know the answer to that question, what is it? Just stop thinking just for a moment, and then what remains? A sense of alertness and clarity remains. Not thinking is fueled by clarity, and thinking is fueled by clarity. This is what clarity is. It's clarity and alertness that is open, like a cloudless sky. And just as a rainbow appears within space, thoughts, emotions, sensations, and all other experiences appear within this vast, open intelligence, totally alert. And just as space, and like I said it before, a rainbow are inseparable. All the thoughts, emotions, sensations, and other experiences are inseparable from clarity. When we stop thinking for a moment, we introduce ourselves to clarity. And before long, we begin to notice, really notice, that clarity is present all the time. It's present when we're thinking, when we're not thinking, when we're awake, when we're asleep, when we're eating, when we're defecating, whatever we're doing. It's always present. And we start to see that all thoughts appear and vanish naturally, like the flight path of a bird in the sky. A simple recognition, always present. And it is both relaxed and potent. Relaxed and potent at the same time. Relaxed in its always openness and evenness and equalness. And potent in its tremendous ability to be of benefit. It saturates all thoughts, everything without exception, all phenomena. There isn't anything that is separate or apart from open intelligence. It's really similar to the vastness of space being present, regardless of what appears within it. This is the simple way, the very simple way to live. By relying on short moments, open intelligence becomes increasingly automatic, and it's that is engaging with everything, rather than the conceptual frameworks we have about ourselves. This may come about for us slowly or quickly, but it doesn't really matter. It just is as it is.
Now, Candace, one of the things that I have done with every guest, and we haven't emphasized this as much because it seemed like there was a lot of interest in really getting exactly what you're talking about this practice, and I feel like we've done that now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's bring this full circle back to the fact that from many reasonably well-informed and evidence-based points of view, our species and biosphere are in crisis, and there are all kinds of accelerating and intensifying versions of it, environmental, there's mass extinctions, there's global warming, there's peak oil, there's peak water, there's unsustainable financial systems, there's culture wars, there's breakdown of the old social fabric, And there's this great evolutionary synthesis that gives us a view of ourselves all the way back to the Big Bang. We've got the Hubble telescope. We've got access to all the world's wisdom traditions. We've got this explosion of scientific knowledge and technological capability. And I've been, you know, asking, how can a higher wisdom help us turn this corner? It's obviously an evolutionary, you know, squeeze point in which a new emergent quality has to appear. And I know your answer to that is open intelligence. But this theme of an era of great benefit, one of the things we've talked about in our private conversations is the sense that this amazing flood of online information exchange, in some sense, is the exhaustion of points of view. I think you've used the phrase, they're just exhausting themselves. And that in some sense, that's part of how this era of great benefit or inexhaustible benefit will come into being. And I'd like to give you a chance to just speak directly to that. We're kind of getting to the end of the time we have just for you and me to dialogue, and we'll begin to take questions here pretty soon. But I wanted to end with this.
We're naturally a networked intelligence. All of humanity is a networked intelligence. From the first word ever spoken or the first grunt made by a human being, to trying to indicate one thing to another, our intelligence has been networked. Now that networked intelligence is appearing as the Internet. On the Internet, what we have is the externalization of the same kind of point of view-driven system that we have internally. And all the points of view are expressed on the Internet. All the negative points of view, all the neutral points of view, all the positive points of view, everything everyone has ever wanted to say can now be said. And it can be said in as many different ways that one could dream up. And so people are very involved in using the Internet to let everyone know what their points of view are. And this, even though it may seem like it's something happening just on a mundane level, nothing ever is happening only in a mundane way. This is a great moment in human history where all of these points of view are just allowed to be as they are, to the point of complete exhaustion of all points of view. After tens of thousands or millions of years of trying to manipulate points of view, all the points of view are just allowed to be as they are. And this is what we call the Internet. It's really a great cathedral, you could say. It's like building a great cathedral of points of view. And in letting all of the points of view be as they are, it allows a relaxation to take place, a relaxation of the tension brought about by a point of view-driven way of life. And this exhaustion of all points of view, the exhaustion of all these phenomena, will lead to a great openness for everyone. So what we see now is, most people feel somewhat ambivalent about the Internet. There are all kinds of feelings about it. But what's actually going on there in a very basic way is incredibly important and is a very key aspect of the era of great benefit. We know very little about ourselves as human beings. We know very little. And we are capable of very much. We are capable of very much. We really are exalted. And in the era of great benefit, we begin to realize that we have incredible power to be of benefit. And we use that power for solving problems we haven't been able to solve before, personal problems and collective problems as well. These are problems that can only be solved by open intelligence. And open intelligence is a survival instinct. And so even as we play with our computers and go from one website to another, we're engaged in an evolutionary process that will bring about complete open intelligence for all beings.
Well, that's beautiful, beautifully put. There's one little point I'd like to ask you to make before we go to Q&A, because I think it's a missing link in all of this, which is I think people can have a sense of why you talk about joy being innate from what we've discussed. What is the evidence? What is the you have really attempted to be very, very precise, as you said, like a physicist, you know, really studying the exact as it isness of the, you know, of the data, and yet you're concluding that our nature is altruistic. A lot of people would dispute that. There are already some questions from folks asking about issues of evil and hurtfulness and deceit. How is it that you state that with such definitive confidence? Can you give us just a whiff of how that arises from the consideration you've just taken us through?
Would you state that question again, please, Terry?
How do you know that we're innately altruistic?
Thank you. I know it from my own experience. I know it from my own experience. So throughout my entire life, I know that to be my own experience, not only for myself, but with others as well. And even though it may not be obvious at times, and certainly isn't obvious in a paradigm of polarized opposites, spontaneous altruism is inseparable from open intelligence, completely inseparable from open intelligence, just like the air is inseparable from space. Open intelligence is another kind of intelligence entirely. It subsumes point of view intelligence. It subsumes reified intelligence. It's a more comprehensive order of intelligence. It doesn't work in the same way. And so in a world of polarized opposites, everything seems either this way or that. But in open intelligence, there is only spontaneous altruism and a life of great benefit.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much. I would like to take this in about seven more different directions, but I know a lot of people who have been listening have already offered us some questions, and others who are on the phone do too. So if you have a question for Candace or for me, please if you're listening via computer, just type it into the instant message window in the instant teleseminar page on your computer. And if you've dialed in by phone, just press *2 on your keypad to raise your hand. And please know that if you press it twice, it lowers your hand. It's a toggle. So just press it once. And I'd like to make sure that you know how to find out more about Candace's work. This rich treasure trove of free audios and videos and books and resources is available at greatfreedom.org. And you also will find out how to connect with other Great Freedom teachers all over the world. And you'll also find a lot of really, it's a simpler site, and but it's very elegant, and I really like it. Balancedview.com, where you can view QuickTime movies of virtual events that Candace has held in the you know, there's this world in the online game Second Life, in which people can have homes and environments and this and that, and Candace has an island, or Great Freedom or something, Balanced View has an island there in Second Life, and so you can watch a video of Candace inviting people to the island for a consideration of open intelligence, which is truly kind of rocks. You'll see her avatar giving that talk. I also want to make sure that you're all aware of my work too. I've recently well, first of all, I have a website, integralspiritualpractice.com, and there are a number of free resources available there. And I'm having just the time of my life right now giving a very rich online course called Integral Spiritual Practice that is available online at ispcourse.com. What's the essence of this is that grounded in the most profound and radical wisdom of the world's most highly awakened spiritual realizations, it's a high-efficiency contemporary path through which you can actually practice a single unifying embodied practice, one that really embraces, you know, body and mind and spirit and the psyche and all of its shadowy and soulful dimensions and your relationships, intimate and public, and practically enact, you know, a single unifying embodied practice that's simple enough and that really always goes right to the heart and is doable because it's flexible and not too time demanding. And I've had the wonderful support of Evolving Wisdom in doing this, so I have this unprecedentedly rich resource of professionally produced audios and videos with inspiring and spiritually potent music that you can watch or listen to and practice with, and a rich online community and personal guidance from me. So it's really profound and high efficiency, and you know, you can just kind of pop on these resources and really find yourself pretty quickly doing a high efficiency practice no matter how busy your life is. So, you know, over the course of this whole series in Beyond Awakening, one of the things that has struck me is the importance of combining the sudden school of awakening and the gradual school of daily practice. And I was moved to develop a step-by-step course that helps people ground themselves in an inspiring and heart-centered daily practice that's truly integral. So if you're curious about that, please take a look at my website to get a little more of a feeling for my approach, and then also ISP course, Integral Spiritual Practice, ispcourse.com. And then I also want to remind everybody, please stay on the line. At the end of this call, I will tell you a little more about what's going to be coming up on with our upcoming guests. In 2 weeks, I'll be interviewing the remarkable poet, translator of Rumi, Andrew Harvey, then Sharon Salzberg, later on A.H. Almas, known as Hamid Ali. And then we'll open up the line so we can hear some of each other's voices, the ones who've called in by phone, and say goodbye. Okay, so let's get on to the question and answers. We have questions, Candace, from all over the world. We've got questions from France and Switzerland and Mexico and Canada and all over the United States. And let me see if we have some live callers too. Yes, we've got several questions. Let me go right away to what I think is a very sophisticated question from someone I actually know personally, Andrew Dorfman from Ashland. He asks, from the point of viewlessness of open intelligence, what descriptions can we give to exactly what thought is, what thinking is, what its source is, what its operation is, what its nature of obstruction is, and what it is that recognizes thinking.
I have no idea.
Well, I feel like that there's this real sincerity and intelligence in asking that question that I'd like to honor in some way. Do you find it just not something that you can respond to, or?
I'd really like to hear a question more related to everyday life. And
Okay.
Yeah.
No problem. There are quite a few. In fact, we've got one that I wanted to make sure to ask also. Alex from Seattle asks, sometimes groups or individuals make decisions that are cruel or wrong. For example, accusing the innocent. If we're always in open intelligence, how can these awful things happen? And how does this, you know, fully answer the problem of that kind of wrongness and even evil?
When people in groups perform such acts, it's very important to recognize things as they actually are, to take a look at reality as it actually is, to see life as it actually is, with nothing left out. And that is really only possible from open intelligence. That's the only way to have that comprehensive view, as well as the ability to draw very acute distinctions that can be helpful in some way. Right now, though, it's really up to us as a species to take a look at ourselves and to see that we really can overcome these problems, that we can stop them. We have not felt that ability or that power. Instead, we have felt, I'd say, collectively powerless in a way, and relying on institutions or authority figures to come to the rescue, to come to bail us out of the trouble we're in. But I think right now, more than ever, human beings are seeing that we're responsible. We're all collectively responsible. There isn't an institution or a group that can come in and bail us out. And so we have to really go back to the beginning, to the starting point of what and who we are, and take a good hard look at that, see what we're really capable of, look at our intelligence as it really is, and take hold of that, get used to it, get used to the power we do have, and then in that way we can right the wrongs that are being done, and maybe even some of those that have been done in the past. But the kind of thinking that got us to the place we're in won't do that. We need another level of intelligence, and that intelligence is ours. It belongs to us. We need to claim the power we have, claim the power we actually have to take care of the human race and to take care of all of the inhabitants of this planet and the planet itself, as well as anyone else we might come into contact with.
Wherever they are.
Well, in our interplanetary expeditions.
Right. Yeah, sure, exactly.
You know.
I've just opened up the line for someone who's calling us from a phone that a 541 area code from Central Point, Oregon, is how it's identified. You're live with us on the air. Please let us know who you are and where you are right now and what your question is.
Hi, Candace. This is Jenny in Ashland, Oregon. And it's such an honor to be here in this celebration of clarity with you. I was wondering if you could talk about reification, a word that you used today.
Thank you, Jenny. Thanks for calling in. The word reification simply means that something is taken to have an independent nature. And so the whole way we think as a species, most of us, is based on reification, where everything is thought to have an independent nature, that it was generated by itself or came about by itself. Whereas if we take a look at nature, we can see nature's magnificent open intelligence, that there isn't anything that could possibly be separate or apart from that. Everything is indivisible in nature's intelligence. Everything equally endowed with nature's intelligence.
Does that negate cause and effect?
Pardon me, Jenny?
Would that negate cause and effect?
It would broaden the perspective on cause and effect.
Okay, beautiful. Well, thank you very much, Jenny, for calling in.
Yeah.
I want to take a question now from James in Paris. He said, you mentioned there are other ways of instantiating open intelligence other than practice and training. What are they?
Well, there are many research projects going on right now for ways of re-engineering the human body, and so that's what I was speaking of most particularly.
Okay.
So
that's
that it would come about through, for example, through a chip, some kind of a chip, or re-engineering of DNA, or that sort of thing.
Okay. From Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, Sperry Andrews asks you if you would please address the capacity of many people, even our entire species, of being capable of sharing open intelligence as a commonly sensed collective consciousness.
Would you reread that question for me, Terry?
What about the capability of larger numbers of people to sense this clarity as a collective intelligence?
What
sensing
is
it together, yeah.
Together, absolutely, yeah. The likelihood of that is increasing every day. So, I'm sure that it will come about.
One of the things that I think he might be referring to is that, you know, some of my previous conversations have been with groups of people, with teachers who, and I too have done this, where groups of people, smaller groups, like the groups you work with, enter into a place in which a transpersonal intelligence begins to speak through everyone that is not really the individual perspectives of each individual, but something that they share begins to visit and express itself collectively. And I think he may be experimenting with that kind of thing himself and is wondering about what role that intersubjective practice might have in addition to the individual practice of brief moments.
Oh, I understand exactly what you're saying. So collective wisdom that is shared or... Absolutely. There is an expression of spontaneous altruism at a heightened level that speaks more through its own voice, that borrows some from each one and comes out in a magnificent form, where outcomes are exceeded, expected outcomes are exceeded.
Wonderful. This is a very real and poignant question from Emma in London. please give me the teaching view on suicide, as I keep coming back to this idea again and again, regardless of what teachings I try to do, including balanced view.
Of coming back to suicide, thoughts of suicide again and again.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is a very important question. And it definitely is a thought and an experience that is shared by many people, many more people than speak out about it. So thank you for speaking so openly about it. Your voice and being able to speak about it right now on this call is helping other people on the call who are thinking about the same thing, and listeners too. And so thank you for asking the question. We don't have a position on suicide, or we don't have any kind of organizational views on the issue of suicide. I can only speak to you as an individual and encourage you to seek support.
I find myself feeling also that it has been my experience that there are, you know, certainly the literature of serious practitioners from the past again and again talks about periods of walking through the desert or a dark night of the soul along the way, and that in that process there is a kind of deepening of the being that people often report, and there is a there isn't there this inherent goodness or inherent innate joy that is the nature of open intelligence might not come forward to your own feeling being easily during any particular day, week, month, or year, but it is reliable in my testimony and in the testimony of so many others and some people who've suffered without it for really, really long periods of time. And it's good, I think, to be just reminded of that. You know, certainly it was interesting recently when Mother Teresa of Calcutta's diaries revealed that she felt completely dried up and dead in her relationship to Jesus for something like 17 years. That living on the basis of what we know to be true, even when we can't feel it, can be an expression of our intelligence. And so I wouldn't want to trivialize this by turning it into a philosophical question. But those perspectives have been a source of comfort and inspiration to me and others that I know, and I hope they're useful to you too.
And I have something to add into that too, Terry. You know where you are in terms of yourself, and so if you are a practitioner and have been practicing for a long time, there can come a period, as Terry said, sometimes called the dark night of the soul. We call it a period of extremely afflictive states, and it is most important in going through such an experience to simultaneously recognize clarity, open intelligence, recognize it simultaneous to the thoughts, the negative thoughts, simultaneously. It is indeed the source of any kind of afflictive state that's coming up and is inseparable from it. So, as Terry said, completely reliable, always on, always available, a very rich resource to draw on. This is absolutely essential for moving beyond this and for understanding deeply and profoundly exactly what it means.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Candace, and thank you, Emma. Question here from Fred in Berkeley. He asks, who were your own main teachers, people whose own teachings and transmissions most inform your great freedom teaching?
Well, I would say everyone I have ever met has greatly informed what we're doing. And, of course, what we do here is as a team, so it isn't just me. We have a team of teachers. We have 36 teachers around the world, and everyone contributes a great deal.
Okay. Thank you, Candace. I want to take a question from a 315 area code, which the caller ID identifies as John Myers in Mineola, New York. You're on the air with us. Please let us know who you are and where you are and what your question is.
Yeah,
hello.
Hi. This is Jane Myers, and I'm in Syracuse, New York, and I'm calling mostly because I want to tell Candace how much I appreciate her website and all the thousands of hours of free audio and video that is available on her website, and the wonderful teachers and the teleteachings and just everything that is available actually for free on the Great Freedom website. And I just wanted to express my appreciation and Also, my excitement about Great Freedom Teachers coming to New York, actually just outside New York in Montclair, New Jersey, and, you know, just how wonderful the teaching is and how much it's helped me. I just wanted to thank Candace for that.
Thanks.
And I don't have any questions because all my questions are answered through all her thousands of hours of talks, so...
Thank you so much. How dear of you.
Thank you, Jane. I'm going to take another question from the Instant Teleseminar window. Graham in, let's see, I'm very, very bad at French pronunciation. Villefranche-sur-Mer, France. How could one continue to reach clarity when one has gone through a traumatic experience, like the death of a very close one, and those memories keep flooding back in and pushing clarity away? I live in a nightmare and have tried everything.
Thank you very much for sharing your experience with us today. Again, even during this time that is so devastating for you, where perhaps it feels there is an end to a relationship, to rely on clarity, the simultaneity of clarity with the depth of the feelings. The simultaneity of clarity. Clarity is saturating all the afflictive states, no matter what they are. In the depths of realizing that clarity saturates all of the afflictive states, no matter what they are, you will find a feeling of continuity of the relationship itself, of continuity, a continuing on with the beloved.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Candace. We have time for just maybe one. I'm going to go a little late with you if you're willing. This is on the web, so we don't have an absolutely hard stop at 11:30. So I hope you don't mind going a couple minutes later. Donna in Asheville asks if you could elaborate on what you mean when you refer to gifts, strengths, and talents.
Each one of us, no matter who we are, we have special abilities, gifts, strengths, and talents. And some of us know what those gifts, strengths, and talents are, and others of us aren't so clear. However, by relying on clarity, we become much clearer about what our gifts, strengths, and talents are, and then we're able to use them to be of benefit. So I would have to ask you a question, caller. And that would be, what do you most enjoy doing? Whatever you most enjoy doing is very likely related to your strengths, gifts, and talents.
That's beautiful. Well, another rich question that I'm noticing. Gosh, there's two more that I can't bear not to ask. Although there's several others I really want to. Peter in Seattle asks. I think maybe this is a quick answer, but I think it's one that maybe many people might be asking. Is human will a factor in the era of inexhaustible benefit? Perhaps choice might be also a question. Is human will or choice a factor in the coming about of that era?
Yes.
Is that enough? Or like essentially the choice to recognize rather than to simply identify and reify?
Yes. I would say it's the zenith of free will.
Right. There are
in its profoundest meaning.
But that's the freest act of free will, is simply the choice to wake into a free context, into the always already free context that is the real nature of things, rather than simply to re-identify and blinker ourselves into that limited version of it all. There are two questions more. I feel like with two people asking this question. One, Carol Edone from St. Gallen in Switzerland, and also Mike Marthaler from Kelowna, B.C. They're asking about ego. Carol's a psychotherapist. She says that I try to include this conceptual framework in my work, if and when possible, to help people see that ego is not who we are. And does Candace see any purpose in the ego as a concept, or if so, what? And then Mike asks, it seems you're simply saying that ego is a self-imposed limitation, not a universal reality.
Yes, it's a self-imposed limitation, not a universal reality. Ego is a self-imposed limitation, not a universal reality.
And we've run out of time. All of the rest of you who've typed in wonderful questions, and there are quite a few of you, I'm going to email these over so Kansas sees them, so that at least you have that level of not being ignored. I'm sorry I wasn't able to get to more. And there are three of you with your hands up, and I'm sorry that I can't get to you either. We, though, do want to say goodbye before we finish up. And so let me thank you so much, Candace. You've been a tremendous influence on my own teaching. My whole approach to integral spiritual practice is, I think, uplifted and clarified in some really important ways by the friendship and learning I've been able to engage in our friendship and relationship. So, I'm really delighted to share you with everybody. let's see, if you are listening to this in some other context and you're curious about this series, please go to beyondawakeningseries.com and register. And to learn about my work, again, please go to integralspiritualpractice.com or my course, ispcourse.com. I also want to make sure that you're aware the greatfreedom.org website has all the resources, but this whole thing I mentioned about the avatar speaking on the is it Clarity Island, Candace?
Benefit Island.
Benefit Island in the Second Life world. That's available at balancedview.com. So I want both of those websites are worth visiting. Now, in 2 weeks, on Mother's Day, I'm going to be interviewing the brilliant mystical scholar and poet Andrew Harvey on the divine feminine and sacred activism. And so I hope many of you will come and listen to that. I think it'll be an energizing and interesting discussion. On May 26th, I'll be speaking with one of the great and original people who's brought, Westerners, who's brought Theravadan Buddhist and mindfulness practice to America, Sharon Salzberg. And there's going to be much more to come, including Hamid Ali, as I mentioned. So thank you so much for joining Candace and me today. Let's open up our phone line so everybody can hear each other's voices and say goodbye. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much,
Candace.
We love you.